When I was a teenager, this feast, coming as it always does on the Sunday after Christmas, sometimes struck me like either a bad joke or a rather pointed reprimand from the church, because it was holiday season and we just spent all this time very closely connected as a family. And then we get prayers that tell us about the model of the Holy Family and all their perfection. And this first reading from Sirach that sounds like, or at least it felt like to me as a teenager and probably fairly disrespectful at times, God kind of elbowing me and saying, that's how you're supposed to treat your mother. And what have you been doing? I think that's an unhelpful way to look at the Holy Family. The Holy Family is this icon of perfection that we're supposed to reach and mostly don't. And maybe particularly at a time in the middle of the holidays where we've either been very closely connected to our families and our extended families and everyone cooped up in the same house for days on end, or else a time where we can't be close to our families because of distance or travel or other obligations, and we're feeling that pain. The fact that we're given a feast to remember what family means can perhaps be a little bit difficult. If we're treating it as your family's supposed to be perfect, right? If we're treating something like the first reading from Sirach as a biblical version of those Christmas letters we get from everyone where, you know, Johnny won this award and Susie just finished her PhD and everybody's doing wonderfully and perfectly and isn't the whole family great and here's a picture of us all in the most beautiful Christmas sweaters ever. That's not what today's feast is supposed to do for us. I've been remembering when I was growing up, one of the Christmas boxes with all the ornaments and the lights and everything, one of the Christmas boxes in our family contained a set of books. So different Christmas books that came out for, you know, usually the month of December or so during Advent, and we'd flip through them. And one of those books, I can't for the life of me remember the title, but one of those books was, you know, pitched at about a fourth grade reading level. It was sort of one of those, one of your first chapter books types of things. And it told the story of a Christmas pageant at a school. But the twist is that this Christmas pageant was effectively taken over by the family of bad kids. The kids whose parents were not all together and were on the outs, and the kids who were bullies, and the kids who, you know, went out back and started smoking before everybody else. Those kids in this book took over the Christmas pageant and bullied all the rest of the kids until they got all the major roles. So the oldest sister was Mary and her brother was Joseph, and here they were looking disheveled and mean, and they took over the Christmas pageant. So instead of this perfect icon of the Holy Family, you had all the bad kids. But the reveal in the book, and the reason that I still remember it, is that everyone else in the congregation, when the Christmas pageant finally goes up, and they get to see these rough kids who aren't the normal emblem of family perfection, playing the Holy Family and looking wild-eyed and worried and a little uncertain. And I remember one of the lines that the girl playing Mary looked like she was ready to sock anyone who tried to touch her baby. That said something true to the people watching. It said something true to me about the Holy Family. The gospel we're given today. Mary and Joseph take Jesus to Jerusalem for the regular observation of the law. Here's our firstborn. Our firstborn must be consecrated to the Lord. And they get there. They get to the temple for what's supposed to be a day of celebration, but just a regular day, where they know everything that's going to unfold. This is a common ritual. They're well aware of it. And they get accosted by crazy people on the steps of the temple. And one of them tells Mary that this is the child who is set for the fall and the rise of many in Israel, and the glory of the Lord will be revealed. And then an old woman starts shouting about finally getting to see the Messiah. And I imagine Mary and Joseph, however perfectly they might have reacted, were taken aback a little bit. That they were shocked. That they had to struggle to figure out how to see their baby boy in this new light. One of the things the Feast of the Holy Family tells us is that God will not leave any part of the human experience untransformed and unconverted. Because who knows us better than our families? Who knows us more closely, warts and all? Who sees us before we've had coffee or brushed our hair in the morning? Who deals with us when we're at our most irritable? Who also sees us when we are most generous, most self-forgetful, most given to love without counting the cost? Our families. And God dives into that reality as well and transforms it. Transforms it for Mary and Joseph, who are asked to see in their newborn son the salvation of Israel, the awaited redemption. And so transforms it for us as well, as we are asked to see in the lives of our own families somehow an echo of the Holy Family, an echo of what Mary and Joseph saw in their newborn son. We are asked to see in the love we bear for each other the potential for transformation into saving and redemptive love. We're asked to open our hearts, even perhaps where they are most tender, because our families are also the ones who can hurt us most deeply. We're asked to open our hearts, especially in the places where they are in need of conversion, where we feel slighted, where we feel underloved, where we feel like we don't have enough love to give. We're asked to open our hearts there to the possibility of God's transforming, saving, redemptive love. So the challenge to us, but also the invitation, is to look at our own families, to look at our own love for our families, whether those are the families we've been born and married into, or whether those are the families forged by years of strong friendships. To look at those families and say, how is the consolation of Israel revealed here? How is the redemption of Jerusalem shown to me in these relationships? That's the invitation from God today. To let the whole world, certainly the world out there, the world of society and the cosmos and nature and all the rest of it, to let that be transformed by God breaking in through the incarnation, but also to let the world that's closest to us, nearest our hearts, that can touch us most deeply, the world of our family and our closest relationships, to let that also be transformed by the love of God.